Welcome to the fourth partnership show of Oregon Community Media, independent community radio and media working in collaboration to better serve Oregon. This time around, you'll hear about genetically modified foods. Participating this time are KBOO Portland, KSKQ Ashland, KSHD in Shady Cove, and KPOV Bend. I'm Erin Yankee from KBOO, collator and host for this episode. Stay tuned. Jackson County, Oregon is known for farming and recently became ground zero for an effort to ban the production of genetically modified foods. Genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, are generally defined as agricultural products which contain the genes of another organism, typically bacteria. GMOs have become a contentious issue. A handful of localities in the United States and many countries worldwide have banned them. But there is an enormously powerful lobby that has fought tooth and nail against bans or labeling of products which contain GMOs. In Jackson County, this became a reality in late February 2012, when farmer Chris Hardy discovered the presence of GMO sugar beets growing adjacent to the land he was leasing. Holly Lauren Adams from KSKQ in Ashland now speaks with Chris Hardy.
First, it was a discovery of genetically engineered sugar beets that were being produced here in early 2012. Our farm was looking to lease a piece of land. We basically discovered through the landowner that we were asking to lease a piece of land from was also leasing to a multinational chemical company from Switzerland. Their name is Syngenta. Big guys. Just a little bit further investigation within a couple days, I had discovered that they were using 23 different chemicals in their production of these Roundup-resistant genetically engineered sugar beets that they were growing for seed for export out of our county. And they were doing this right out the back of the Ashland Middle School, an elementary school, and another middle school right next door, like literally over the fence. So this was all like dropped right in our face here in Southern Oregon, and understanding that they were required by the USDA to keep an isolation distance of 4 miles from any other seed producer in the area, from any other farm. And after talking with multiple farms across the valley, found out that they were saving seeds unbeknownst to them within the USDA required 4 mile isolation distance. And of course, that took a little bit of investigation as well, because they are not required under permit by USDA to keep these locations public. That really kind of fueled the fire for the angst that people had in Southern Oregon about this project, this experiment of the seed production that Syngenta was doing here. And further investigation and talking to seed breeders, people, colleagues in the seed industry, it was likely that Syngenta, this was the heart of the foundation of their sugar beet seed production, which then is sent all over the world to produce sugar beets. It starts right in Southern Oregon. They're growing them currently here in Jackson and Josephine County on little quarter-acre, half-acre, one-acre plots throughout Jackson and Josephine County here in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon. So that was kind of the wake-up call for us in early 2012. And so I put the call out. We had about 75 people show up from all over the valley. Farmers, citizens, mothers, teachers, people from all walks of the Rogue Valley. And we got very clear within a few days, maybe a couple weeks, that the effort that we were going to be stepping up for was to ban the growth of genetically engineered crops in Jackson County. In Josephine County, it was a few months, maybe 6 months later. Josephine also had a core team put together, put an initiative on the ballot as well to protect family farms across the region. It's important to understand what's at stake here. Having genetically engineered crops being grown in our valley in Southern Oregon is a clear threat to family farms across the region. What we knew this was really about was about our farmers. We had to really be successful at our efforts. We had to get the word out to the whole region, the whole county, about the clear threats that genetically engineered crops pose to the future of family farms in the area. Fortunately, within within, you know, months. First, we had already started checking in with businesses, checking with farms and physicians, all community organizations. And within a number of months, we had a few hundred farms and businesses and community organizations signed in support of the ban. I think that was a really key part of our effort, was to make clear to everyone that this wasn't just a few people in the county. It was really a very important piece that could impact not only community gardens, but businesses whose bottom line depends upon the success of farmers who signed on into one area, so we could continue to build that list. And that list now, as it exists, is over 600. That does include nearly 200 farms, from, you know, conventional to organic to all levels of traditional farming across the valley, have signed in support of the ordinance. And so I feel that was a really important piece to our effort. And when the people could see that the farmers actually coming out and having a voice to share with the community their feelings on the matter, that really gave the community some incentive, like, wow, those are the family farms that we know, that we see at the growers markets. We see them all over the valley. We go to the grocery store. We purchase their products right down the street here. That, I believe, is really important for all the people that were there to show up, to hear all the concerns about, you know, whether they were going to vote yes or vote no. I would like to thank the people who showed up. I think it was a really defining moment in our community. 42,000 citizens who showed up to vote yes, and the hundreds of businesses and farms across the region that stepped up to formally endorse and support the measure. Those are the shining gems, you know. They're the people who showed up. They know who they are. It's important to understand that by the passage of the Oregon Monsanto Protection Act that was signed into law by the governor of Oregon here last fall, Jackson County was the only one who was authorized by the state of Oregon to be able to do such a thing as we have done, protecting them by removing genetically engineered crops from the valley. That has just been a really important piece to the whole effort here. Of the very few local initiatives in the whole United States that have successfully banned the growth of genetically engineered crops, Jackson County is the only one who actually had chemical companies producing the technology themselves in the county. So this is going to be a direct blow to the chemical industry, and they understand it, and they know that their days may be numbered as the clear rising up of the people across the U.S. around wanting their food labeled. Executives from Monsanto a number of years ago saying that by labeling GMOs, you might as well put a skull and crossbones on the package. It's clear that most people understand that this is hardly something we can call food, just about money. It's not about feeding the world. And as we understand with feeding the world, it's all how much spin you want to put on it. You know, we already grow 30% more food than is needed to feed the world. It's not like we need more food. We need more quality food and less junk. Visit OurFamilyFarmsCoalition.org, either on Facebook or on the World Wide Web.
This is Holly Lorian Adams from KSKQ 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon, with the Oregon Community Media.
We now hear from KBOO Community Radio in Portland to get a bit deeper into the Jackson County electoral fight. Here's Don Merrill.
Monsanto would contribute $180,000 to the effort to stop Jackson 15-119. DuPont spent $125,000. Spending by GMO-free Jackson County would have easily broken records for political spending on a ballot initiative in the county. They raised over $400,000. In all, the opposition to the GMO ban raised almost $1 million, with the Big Six raising more than GMO-free Jackson entirely, $450,000. A glut of expensive political ads overtook the airwaves.
There's a lot of political bull starting to fly around Jackson County. Out-of-state chemical corporations aren't happy that the family farms measure would protect our family farms.
Genetically engineered crops are threatening Jackson County's family farmers. One gust of wind and pollen patented by giant chemical corporations can trespass onto farms like mine.
If Measure 15-119 passes, it would be very unfair to us as farmers who are trying to make a good, honest living.
Ballot measure 15-119 will be very bad for a lot of families.
Jared Waters is a Jackson County farmer who has grown conventionally as well as leased plots to grow GMOs. He supported the ban and said that the history of the Big Six inspired others to approve it too.
for a lot of the people, the reason they got involved was just the history of the companies that are pushing GMOs is not a good history. I mean, Vietnam with Agent Orange, DDT, we've got lots of farmers down here dying from DDT.
Waters said that his break with GMO farming was for economic reasons, and that his opposition to GMO crops is due to irresponsible growing practices by GMO farmers, which can place neighboring farmers' crops at risk.
You know, I'm not an environmentalist by any means. I agree with environmental accountability, where if I destroy something, that I should be accountable for it, whether it was intentional or accidental.
GMOs also had a large impact on the state economy early in 2013. An anonymous farmer in northeastern Oregon had found an illegal patch of Roundup herbicide-resistant wheat patented by Monsanto growing in the middle of his conventional wheat field. GMO wheat had been grown for test trials in the region in 1994 and again in 2005, but was never approved or mass-produced, so no one knew how Roundup-ready wheat came to be growing in the middle of a field of conventional wheat years later. In response, Asian markets with GMO bans canceled purchases worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and Oregon's ability to export wheat internationally was in doubt.
Scott Dahlman is the executive director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, a pro-GMO and pesticide lobbying group with representatives from Monsanto and Syngenta on its board, along with state and national farming organizations. Oregonians for Food and Shelter campaigned against the ban. Dahlman contends the ban will hurt local farmers.
Our members, actual farmers down there, either use the technology or want to use the technology and felt that that was at risk, which obviously it was, and now many of them are in a very bad situation.
On May 20th, Jackson County voters went to the polls and resoundingly banned GMOs with 66% approval, becoming just one of a handful of jurisdictions in the entire United States where GMO crops are banned.
We'll now hear from Oregon Community Media partners KSHD in Shady Cove. We back up a bit into the campaign and hear more about the community organizing that went into it.
I'm David Christian, General Manager, KSHD 94.3 FM in Shady Cove, Oregon. Local farmers met with Syngenta here in Jackson County last year, proposing a coexistence model. But Syngenta said it would continue as normal and left the meeting. That spurred the whole thing, said Steve Fry of Fry Family Farm in Talent. They didn't care one bit about local farmers. The family farmer's strategy was simple but effective. Supporters of the GMO ban wrote countless letters to the editorial pages of local newspapers, spoke at every meeting that they could possibly attend, and used social media very effectively. The opponents of the measure ran larger-than-life posters touting the dangers and the cost of not allowing GMOs in the valley. They ran television ads that threatened that if the GMO bill passed, that the sheriff's departments and local police would be engaged, along with other statewide government agencies, in policing small and big farmers throughout the county. Images of government goon squads were depicted quite graphically in those ads. Schools and libraries would lose funding because of diverted funds to enforce the bill, and the whole community would suffer if we were duped into passing this bill.
Hey, this is Slater Johnson from KSHD 94.3 FM's The Voice of the Upper Rogue with a couple of guests. We are discussing the recent election and the bill banning GMOs here in Jackson County and finding out how and why our guests voted the way they did. I want to welcome Kim to the studio. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name is Kim. I live here in Medford. I've been in the Rogue Valley for 12 years. I'm a single mom. I have an 8-year-old son, and I voted.
That brings us to the reason why we've got you here in the studio with us, and that is to talk about your view on the recent election with the bill proposing to ban GMOs. Can you please tell us how you voted?
I voted yes on the ban. I think that GMOs should not be a part of our valley. I've noticed with this issue, even people who don't know anything about farming, everybody seems to have an opinion on whether or not GMOs are a good thing. I personally don't feel corporations should have control over the food supply, which is kind of what it seems what they're trying to do.
It's like big business trying to step in and go, hey, this is what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
Well, with their methods of bioengineering food and then putting a patent on it and then trying to basically take over everybody's farms, you know, either by only letting them sell their seed and then owning all of it, or their stuff contaminating the next door farm who didn't want it in the first place. I mean, it just seems like it's steamrolling everything it comes into contact with, and I definitely don't support that. I think people should have options. What's good for our environment? What's good for our bodies? That's the issue at hand for me. I mean, if I could afford it, I would buy nothing but organic. I would buy nothing but local. I try, but when people talk about buying local, they don't want to buy genetically modified local things. They would like to buy good, wholesome, non-messed with natural products, not something that's, you know, a Frankenfood. I don't know anybody who prefers genetically modified food as opposed to organic or traditional. I don't know anybody who prefers that. But we digress to it just because, first of all, we don't know because it's not on there. It's not labeled.
I want to thank you, Kim, for being here with us in the studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're going to welcome our next guest. We have Crystal Keeble with us. So how long have you lived here in the Rogue Valley?
I've lived in the Rogue Valley pretty much all my life.
So you must be aware of the local community and the farmer situation here in the Rogue Valley.
Oh, yes. I think it's great that the farmers get together and cooperate and have the farmers market so that you can go and buy fresh watermelons on a Saturday, or go and pick apples or pick strawberries with all the little home farms that are around.
And that brings us to our main topic. That is the recent election with the ban of GMOs here in the Rogue Valley. Can you tell us how you voted and a little bit about why you voted the way you did?
I voted no on that issue. The first thing that caught my attention, actually and truthfully, in the measure was that people were going to be allowed to go onto the farmer's land to inspect. When I read it, it didn't say that he had to have a warrant or things like that, but there's going to be a ordinance enforcement task force. What kind of rules are they going to be governed by? I don't like the idea of government officials being able to go onto somebody's land without probable cause.
At the same time, though, without the ban, our farmers who weren't growing GMOs would have been under the same scrutiny.
That is true. All the farmers are under scrutiny by the public for what they're growing. A lot of people want organic, non-pesticide, you know, fruits and vegetables. They want to know that their food is fresh and where it's coming from. A lot of people are uncertain about genetically modified organisms and plants and how that's going to affect our food cycle and the body as well. Also, this is the wrong time of year. We are already struggling in this economy, and why hurt the farmers even more? You put a ban on it, there's already the stigma, and the public that doesn't understand will not buy their products, even though they know that this year it's okay. But the public is going to scrutinize them even more.
Thanks to KSHD in Shady Cove. You are listening to a statewide collaborative report on genetically modified organisms produced by Oregon Community Media. Again, here's Don Merrill from KBOO.
Josephine County, Jackson's neighbor to the west, also passed a ban on May 20th, but now they're most likely unable to enforce it.
Both Jackson and Josephine counties passed their GMO bans via voter-created and approved referendums. But Jackson County's GMO ban made the ballot before an Oregon law came into effect, which would preempt it. 2013 Senate Bill 863 preempts localities from regulating agricultural seeds or any produce that would grow from it. When it was initially introduced as Senate Bill 633, its critics called it the Monsanto Protection Act and said it was a specific response to the two anti-GMO initiatives. Dahlman doesn't disagree.
It was a response to what we saw going on in a lot of areas. It hadn't really been considered before that local entities would start trying to regulate what kind of agricultural seed a farmer could plant. I think that Jackson County brought some attention to that, but it was a much broader issue for our members. All over the state, the potential for a patchwork of regulations was very, very concerning.
SB 863 was passed in a special session, primarily concerned with limiting public employee pension costs and funding education, where lawmakers were informed by Governor John Kitzhaber that he would sign all the bills they could compromise on or none. The result was last year's so-called grand bargain. Dahlman said that Oregonians for Food and Shelter are considering challenging the Jackson County GMO ban. He also said that he expects the court to strike down Josephine County's ban.
I think the courts are going to be working it out one way or another. We think that it is clearly preempted by that law.
Chris Hardy, the farmer who found the GMO beets in the first place, says that Jackson County's response at the polls should suffice.
The two-thirds of Jackson County citizens voting in favor of Measure 15119 should send a clear message to any politicians, any legal battle. They're barking up the wrong tree. Our citizens in Jackson County and in Josephine County believe that protecting the future, believe in protecting family farms in southern Oregon is more important than protecting the interests of chemical corporations.
The KABU pieces were excerpted from a special reporting series investigating Oregon legislation which has been influenced or created by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. It was produced collaboratively by Mike Kepfler, Don Merrill, Yana Makhmova, Sam Smith, and Sam Bowman. The full report can be heard at KABU.fm. Next up will be a piece from KPOV in Bend. Hillary Barud reports on a state task force that's exploring GMO issues that could lead to legislation next year. The issue could have an impact in Central Oregon, where seed crops are an important part of the economy.
Seed growing is big business for Central Oregon farmers. How big? Well, consider the carrot seed. Marvin Butler, a crop scientist with the Oregon State University Extension Service, explains.
Just alone, the hybrid carrot seed brings in over $15 million into the Central Oregon economy.
Butler works at the Central Oregon Agricultural Research Center, testing out new crop varieties and pest control methods. Basically, whatever might help local farmers succeed. And carrot seed is their big success story.
We're the largest producer of hybrid carrot seed in the world. Produce about two-thirds of the world supply of hybrid carrot seed, also for the U.S. consumption to be about 80-85% of that. So when you buy the baby carrots in the grocery store to eat, we probably grew the seed that was used to plant that crop.
Despite the money at stake in the local seed industry, genetically engineered seeds have not stirred up much controversy in this area of the state. Potential conflict between growers of genetically engineered and non-engineered crops was among the specific reasons Governor John Kitzhaber cited last fall when he called for officials to begin exploring possible legislation on the issue to introduce in the 2015 legislative session. At the governor's request, a state task force began exploring issues around GMO crops and food in April. The group is supposed to finish its work by the fall, and the findings could form the basis of new regulations. Butler said that unlike in the Willamette Valley, where organic farms are often next to genetically modified crops, Central Oregon just doesn't have much of any GMO seed crop. That doesn't mean local farmers aren't protective of their seeds.
As far as I know, we don't grow any genetically modified seed crops at this time. We have in the past. We'd grow high-quality seed that then sent around the world. So there is an interest by the growers in the industry to not do anything that would have an adverse effect on them. And that would include contamination of our seed crops with anything that was GMO.
Seed crop contamination is just one of the issues the state task force is discussing. Peter Harkema is a project manager at Oregon Consensus, a group based at Portland State University that is helping the task force complete its assignment. Harkema says the governor asked the task force to do three things.
The first was to identify and frame the main issues and challenges surrounding the use of GE in the state of Oregon. The second was to identify and describe areas of agreement and disagreement. And then the last piece of the work is to really describe what other jurisdictions, other areas have done to address the challenges and concerns that were identified.
The topics discussed by the task force include economic and social issues, consumer and grower information and choice, and ethical issues. Harkema said Oregon's strategy of asking the task force to explore these issues is unique.
I'm not aware of another state that approached this issue in this way. I think it's a uniquely Oregon approach that the governor has decided to appoint a task force of diverse interest to really discuss these issues in a thoughtful way.
By this fall, as farmers around the state harvest their crops, it might be a little clearer whether the governor's approach is succeeding and whether the different groups with an interest in genetically engineered crops have been able to find common ground. This is Hilary Borud from KPOV with Oregon Community Media.
Our last piece will be another from KPOV in Bend. Dylan Darling reports on how to determine if there are GMOs in the food you're picking up at the grocery store.
I wanted to find out how to know if food at the grocery store had genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, in it or not. Larger grocery chains decline interview requests, so I went to a couple of small shops in Bend. My first stop was Central Oregon Locavore, where I met Pat Brown. He's the executive director at the nonprofit, which has a food market. So, how do you tell if there is GMOs in a food?
The easiest way is, if it is certified organic, then it should not have any GMO product in it. For example, if it's certified organic apples or tomatoes, then they can't be grown from seed that was genetically modified. The next step for some of the products, there is a non-GMO certification. So some of the items, they might not be certified organic, but they can be certified as non-GMO. So those two ways are the easiest.
We went for a walk through the shop.
Let's see here. Here in the produce section, you'll see we've got Cheshire Ridge Farm, and this is Oregon Health Certified Organic. It's non-GMO seed. It's a non-GMO product. With kettle chips, you can see here, this is the non-GMO verified through non-GMO project. So these potatoes don't contain any genetically modified organisms. But they're not organic. They're just certified as non-GMO. Whereas kale chips are certified organic by USDA Organic. So they're organic, and that then means they don't have any GMO.
I also went by Nature's, where I talked to Wade Combs. He's the grocery manager there. Wade gave me the same advice, in the opposite order as Pat.
Our shoppers are always shopping us for information as much as all of our products. I get these questions quite often about how can I tell non-GMO products from GMO products. The best way is through the non-GMO verification, non-GMO project verification. It's a third party that tests products for companies, and once they get proven that there's no GMOs in there, then they can actually put their logo on their product. That's 100% guaranteed because it's been third party tested and approved. The second way is buying organic. The Oregon Tilth certification, the organic certification is pretty hard to get it certified. If you're buying organic, then you shouldn't have GMO'd seeds or products in it.
This is Dylan Darling from KPOV Bend with Oregon Community Media.
Thanks to all the supporting stations, KPOV in Bend, KSKQ in Ashland, KSHD in Shady Cove, and KBOO Portland. Thanks to Dim Sums for providing the background music. Stay tuned to a radio near you for more from Oregon Community Media. We'll be working to strengthen the independent station serving audiences from Florence to Fossil, with great music programming, such as the statewide broadcast of the Waterfront Blues Festival and another collaborative show to air in August 2014. I'm Erin Yankee. Thanks for listening.